to the Stephen A. Smith Show.
Minutes past hour number one, back here on the Stephen A. Smith Show, Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio. Number to call up, as always, is 888-MAD-DOG-6. That's 888-623-3646. Any minute now, I'm expecting to have the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, the one and only Adam Silver, on for just a few minutes. He's a very, very busy man, but he was kind enough to make time out of his busy schedule to come on the show. So I'm looking forward to talking to him any second now. You know, remember, he is the man that has been the commissioner since 2014, guiding the league through global expansion, digital media growth, and major social initiatives as well. Let's not forget that. Please welcome to the show, one and only Commissioner Adam Silver. How are you, sir? How's everything?
I'm great, Stephen A., and I heard your introduction, and I'm not as busy as you are. I've lost count over the number of shows you have, so
well,
I appreciate
your time
as well.
Well, you know, any show that I have, you're always welcomed on. I think the first order of business, Commissioner, is to say congratulations. The NBA reported that 170 million people watched games this season, the league's best overall audience number in 24 years, and it was an 86% increase from last year. So I guess the first question would be, what does it say to you about the strength of the league in year one of the new 11-year, $76 billion media rights deal with ESPN, NBC, Amazon Prime Video, and Peacock to immediately produce such results? How do you feel about it? What do you have to say to the world about the NBA right now?
You know, just begin by thanking our television partners, of course, you know, your network, ESPN and ABC, but I also think NBC, Peacock, and now Amazon Prime have done a fantastic job. I think it's a testament to where we're going with media. I mean, this show, of course, is streamed, and so much media is now, and it's the best way to reach younger viewers. I mean, there's still a role for broadcast television and traditional cable, but clearly our fans are finding our games, which was something we were a bit concerned about going into the season with new partners. And also, I think it's a testament to the product itself that people love NBA basketball. They love the drama around it. They love the personalities. And it's why the kind of coverage you and your colleagues provide is so meaningful, because it's ultimately about stories, and people want to know about the personalities and the characters who are participating in this league.
Is that what you would lean on specifically when you think about the fact that the NBA is thriving with younger audiences at a time when traditional television metrics are changing so dramatically? Or is there something additional that you'd like to add to why that's been
it begins first and foremost with the game. I mean, you got to have a great product if you're going to bring in an audience. There's no question about it. But I also saw what was happening up until the change in our most recent deals, that increasingly our fans were disenfranchised by traditional television. I mean, the lines crossed recently where more people are watching programming on streaming services than they are in traditional television. So if you want to find that audience, you got to be on platforms that they're following. So I think it's a combination. Great, you know, young stars in this league, you know, stars who've been around forever, you know, seemingly, who are continuing to draw audiences. But people also love this game. I mean, the game itself is so popular. It's the number one participation sport in this country. Look what's happening with women's basketball. We're bringing in a heavier female audience than we have traditionally. I think it's also in a time when people feel disconnected from so many other things in their lives. I mean, this is something you've talked a lot about. I mean, it creates a sense of belonging. It's a sense of commonality. There's not all that much we have in common. And, you know, our teams are in blue states, red states, you know, huge cities, smaller cities. People love this game of basketball, and they love connecting through it. And that only speaks to the United States. And, you know, we're seeing huge audiences outside the U.S., but that's a separate issue.
The game is loved not just nationally, but globally. And I think the NBA has proven that. But loving the game while being the commissioner overseeing the game the way that you have, there have been things that you've been on the record that you haven't been in love with. We've discussed things like load management. You've addressed the issue of tanking and stuff like that. I wanted to ask you, how much of a concern, coming from your words, has it been for you this season? In the midst of all this success, you clearly felt the need to address it to some degree. Tell us why, and tell us what really, really resonated with you that made you take the positions that you've taken.
Yeah, I'd say, so just two issues you addressed. One, load management, the other, you know, tanking. I'd say in terms of load management, we've been addressing that over the last several seasons. So we were down 30% this season in terms of single game absences by star players. Yeah. So I think the players got the message. The team's got the message. I also think for a longer discussion, it's not even clear that load management works. You know, for example, we have more injuries at the beginning of the season. We have more injuries coming out of the All-Star break than we do late in the season. It may be ultimately the doctors and the scientists are going to conclude that players don't have enough load at certain points. So I understand sort of the groupthink mentality in this league. If there's that sense that the way to preserve your players is to sit them, it then becomes a trend. But I think in addition to demonstrating, I think through the medicine and the science, that's not necessarily an effective strategy by having the 65-game rule in place, by having the NBA Cup, by having the player participation policy, we address that directly. So that's that issue. In terms of the tanking, there's no question that what we saw this season was unprecedented. You talked a lot about it. Your colleagues have talked a lot about it. Again, I think a bit of a groupthink there. Obviously, by definition, it can't be successful for all the teams that were engaging in that strategy. But on the other hand, the analytics, which all the sports are using today, suggest that it's potentially a winning strategy, and that is to and that is to race to the bottom in order to get higher draft picks. I think there was a bit of a perfect storm this year. You have a perception of a very deep draft class, which it appears to be, some great players coming into the league. And then even fans in particular cities and even media in those cities to a certain degree were rooting for their teams to tank and saying, you know, how well can your team be managed if you're sort of just in the middle? You either got to be great or you got to let yourself get bad. And I think we had to respond not just to the narrative, but to a misalignment of incentives. Once sort of the guardrails came off and it was an accepted practice in this league, and you saw as many teams just flat out say it, tanking it as we saw. And I'm not sort of blaming any particular team because I understand the incentives to do so. We had to address it immediately. And to the credit of our teams, I think in record time, they came together this season and said, all right, we're going to fix this for beginning next season. I guess some people could have said you could have fixed it for this draft, but I don't think it would have been fair to change the rules of the road in the middle of a season. But what we've essentially done, and we have a proposal that we're going to be bringing to, you know, our team owners at the end of May, and that is to create essentially a system of flat odds, you know, so that you have no particular incentive to be bad, that there's even something we're calling draft relegation, that if you're one of the bottom three teams in the league, you'll actually have worse odds than teams that sort of are, you know, four through up until teams make the playoffs. You know, we're still playing a little bit with the system there. And also, ultimately, additional authority for the league office, that if we do see that type of behavior where there's a sense that teams aren't going all out to win, that we can actually take away draft lottery balls, we can change the order of the draft, you know, that teams have to know it's not just about paying a financial fine, which they may think is worth it in order to get a top pick, but that it will directly impact their ability to get a top draft pick.
Do you anticipate that there'll ever be more than 14 teams in the draft lottery? I mean, are you thinking about it along those lines?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I think what the principle here still for a draft is you want your teams that are most in need of restocking and to get great talent to be in a better position than a team, for example, that, you know, came out of the conference finals or the finals. The issue is, I think, while you don't want an incentive to lose and you want every incentive to win, it isn't necessarily in the best interest of the league for a top tier team loaded with talent to then turn around and get a top draft pick. So the system that we're going to be putting in front of our teams will be in effect for 3 years. What we're telling our teams is, you know, the term people use is it will sunset. In other words, this is going to be a new flat odds system. It'll be in place for 3 years and will give us time for additional study to see whether there are other creative ways to better distribute players. And it'll also give us an opportunity to see how our teams respond to the system. Because one thing I've learned, whether it's new provisions in the collective bargaining agreement, new provisions in the draft lottery, which, as you know, we've changed many times over the years. Yeah. The teams are incredibly innovative and creative at coming up with ways to work the system. And I get it. I don't mean that critically. That's what their jobs are. You know, once you put in place these rules, to do everything in their power to win. So we'll see exactly how teams respond to this new system. But I don't think there's any doubt that we will immediately change the incentive to race to the bottom. And I think it's overdue. Fans certainly, you know, are unhappy with the system we have now, other than, I have to admit, fans in particular cities were actually rooting for their teams.
Yes.
To race to the bottom, because again, let's acknowledge that's a strategy for winning. It's just a longer term strategy for winning.
Right.
It just means like over time, we're going to get better players.
Yeah. And a team like San Antonio is improving that three times over. David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and now Victor Wembanyama. So that's a perfect example of that. We're talking to Commissioner Adam Silver, the NBA, right here with Stephen A, SiriusXM Mad Dog Sports Radio. How satisfied are you, Commissioner, with the early results of the NBA 65 game rule tied to awards eligibility?
I'm very satisfied. So the issue again was going into the last collective bargaining negotiation, roughly a third of our all NBA players had played fewer than 65 games, fewer than 80% of the games. And so the view was, and remember, this was a provision that was put in place through a negotiation with the Players Association. Everyone was recognizing that we have to put our best foot forward. This is not in the interest of the fans. For the players they most want to see, our all-star players, to miss those high number of games. And we landed on 65 as looking at past data, what's the approximate number of games that players, you know, who have lost for injury, but not because of some load management notion or some resting notion, and we landed on 65. We always knew whatever line we drew that there would be players that would fall on the other side of it, the low end of it, and there might be a sense of unfairness, which is why we put in place a provision around, quote, extraordinary circumstances, that if a player missed the 65 games for a game or two, but that there was an exceptional, you know, an unusual reason that something happened over the course of the season, there'd be a process for making an exception. So I am happy where that came out. I mean, I understand a player like Anthony Edwards was at 60 and missed it. He had the right through the Players Association to appeal that decision. It went to an independent arbitrator who said, I'm sorry, you missed the 65 game line. So, but like, I think that when you have to look at it in the totality of the number of players who might otherwise have rested and say, no, that matters to me to be all NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to play those games I might otherwise have rested, or the teams knowing that their players care and got them out on the floor, which is what the fans want to see.
I know you got to get ready to go. I've just got a couple of questions left for you. I want to know, what do you say to critics who believe players now push themselves to return too quickly because of the awards, all NBA implications, and Supermax eligibility? What do you feel? What do you say to critics who bring that up?
I haven't seen it. And I would say that we're on guard about that. Like, I don't think there's any player out there or team that's willing to sacrifice a player's career because they're coming back too early. I don't think anybody was suggesting Jason Tatum came back too early a season and there was nothing on the line in terms of 65 games or whatever else. I think, you know, players as well as I do, they love this game. They want to be out there playing. That's why we landed on 65 games. I think if there was a higher number of games, there was concern that players might come back too early. But I think we landed in the right place at 65. You know, of course, when we sit down next time to bargain with the players, we'll look at all the data and see whether that it should be tweaked in some way. But again, it's worked the way we hoped it would, which is, right, as I said, players missing single game absences are down over 30% this past season.
Adam, before I let you go, very last question. I'd be remiss in neglecting to bring up how emotional this week must have been for the entire NBA family, losing Jason Collins, the league's first openly gay active player. He lost a battle with cancer a few days ago. And, of course, the heartbreaking loss of Brandon Clark of the Memphis Grizzlies that just happened a couple of days ago at age 29. Your thoughts about that?
You know, I just say that both of them, the loss of both of them is tragic in different ways. You know, Brandon, I mean, to be so young and, you know, to have, you know, he struggled, no question, this year. You know, and I don't know all the circumstances yet.
Right.
But, you know, he, wonderful person who I got to know, and it's just a tragic, tragic loss. I think it, you know, for Jason, I spent an enormous amount of time with him post his playing career. I remember the conversations David Stern and I had with him and his then agent, Arn Tellem, when he made that decision to come out, you know, publicly, which was a historical decision, you know, at the time. And just based on how the world has unfolded, even in the convening 12 years or so, you know, there hasn't been any other players who've come out as openly gay. So it just shows how courageous he was, any other NBA players, I should say.
Yeah.
So how amazingly courageous he was at the time. And he devoted so much of his time, you know, post playing career to speaking out on issues that he cared about. He, you know, became an ambassador to the league, a close friend to so many of us here. So, as you said, it's a really sad time at the league losing those two guys.
Adam, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I know you've got to go. I really appreciate it. Congratulations on the NBA most watched first round in 33 years. That's what this first round of these players have been like. It's been a fantastic playoffs to watch. There's a lot to talk about down the line at a later date. Hopefully we'll get more time together. I really appreciate the time that you made out today. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you soon. And you know I'll see you during the conference finals and the finals.
Thank you, Stephen A.
All right. One and only, Adam Silver, commissioner for the National Basketball Association. Extraordinary commissioner, doing a great job, no doubt about it. Addressing the problems that need to be addressed when they need to be addressed, if not sooner than that. So give him props for that in the league. Say what you will. A lot of times it's driving us crazy because the games are all over the place, but people are watching all across the globe. Make no mistake about it. Biggest first round in 33 years. Most watched first round. 170 million people in the United States watched NBA games across national networks throughout the regular season, the most in 24 years, and that was up 86% year over year. Overall, you're talking about a landmark deal, landmark regular season and viewership across ABC, ESPN, Amazon Prime Video, NBC/Peacock. All of it has continued the momentum into the playoffs, obviously. There's a lot to talk to him about, but he had a hard out. He had a lot to think. He got a lot going on, got a lot of things to do. But he carved out 15 minutes to give to me, and I really, really appreciate him taking time out of his busy schedule to do it. 888-MAD-DOG-6 is always the number to call up. That's 888-623-3646. You're listening live to the Stephen A. Smith Show, SiriusXM, Mad Dog Sports Radio. Back with your calls and more in a minute. Remember, every NBA playoff game is on SiriusXM. Tonight at 8 Eastern on NBA Radio, Channel 86. Hear Game 5 between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Detroit Pistons with the series tied 2-2. Remember, you can hear the hometown calls of every NBA postseason game on SiriusXM. For the full schedule, including game times and channels, visit SiriusXM.com/sports. That's SiriusXM.com/sports. Your calls and more in a minute. Don't go away. It's Stephen A. in the house. Mad Dog style.